Hey there, and welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about a book that really shook me. It's called Morality by Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. Sophie, you read this one too, right? What was your first reaction?
Oh, absolutely. I was struck by how timely it feels. Sacks wrote this before the pandemic, but it's like he saw the fractures that would explode. He's talking about why we feel so anxious, divided, and alone, even though we've never had more wealth or freedom.
Yeah, that paradox is the puzzle at the heart of the book. We can connect with anyone, anywhere, anytime. We have more information than ever. And yet something's off. We're more isolated, more tribal.
And Sacks's diagnosis is that the West has lost the very idea of morality. Not just specific moral rules, but the whole framework of shared values that holds a society together.
He calls this the Great Disruption, which started in the 60s and 70s. The traditional institutions that anchored our lives, like family, community, church, they started to lose their authority. We move from a culture of we to a culture of I.
Right.
Instead of asking about our duties to others, we started asking about our rights as individuals. And Sacks says that shift, while liberating in some ways, has been profoundly destabilizing.
The big idea is that you can't run a society on self-interest alone. Markets and the state are powerful, but they're morally blind. The market chases profit and the state chases power. Neither can create the trust, loyalty, and shared purpose that we really need.
Exactly.
Those things only come from a shared moral code, values we hold because we believe they're good, not because they're enforced by law or incentivized by profit. And Sacks argues we've stripped that code from public discourse, leaving a vacuum filled by anger and tribalism.
He doesn't exactly spare political ideologies either. He takes on both the hard right and the hard left.
Yes.
He says the hard right's faith in the free market is a dangerous illusion. Markets can create wealth, but they can also destroy communities and widen inequality. When everything becomes a transaction, something sacred is lost.
And the hard left? He's just as tough on them.
He is.
The state, with its bureaucracy and focus on rights, can turn citizens into passive clients. It replaces the face-to-face relationships of community with a cold, legalistic bond between the individual and the state.
So it's not about picking a side. He's saying both have failed to provide a moral foundation.
Right.
And that's why he offers a way forward, which is to rediscover what he calls a moral covenant. This is deeper than a social contract. A contract is about exchanging goods and services. It's transactional. But a covenant is about loyalty and trust. It's rooted in shared history and commitment to a common good.
A contract benefits the individual parties, but a covenant benefits the relationship itself, like a family or a close-knit community. That's the kind of bond that makes us willing to sacrifice for each other.
And at the core of this covenant are some simple, ancient ideas. The first is the idea of the good. Sacks says we've become terrified of making moral judgments. We've confused tolerance with the belief that all values are equal. But a society that can't tell good from evil has lost its moral compass.
That's a tough one, because nobody wants to be judgmental. But he's not saying we should be moralistic about individuals. He's saying we need to affirm certain virtues as good and certain vices as bad. A society that celebrates greed or violence is poisoning its own soul.
The second key idea is responsibility. We're obsessed with rights, but we rarely talk about our responsibilities to family, neighbors, and community. Sacks says this isn't a burden. It's what gives life meaning. We find purpose in what we give, not what we get.
He points out that the Ten Commandments aren't a list of rights. They're a list of duties. They tell us what we owe to God and to each other. That's the grammar of a moral society.
And the third pillar is community. We've atomized society into isolated individuals. We've lost the intermediate institutions like family, local churches, and voluntary groups that stand between the individual and the state. These are the schools of character where we learn trust and cooperation.
He makes a powerful point about the breakdown of the family. He says it's been a catastrophic social disaster, especially for the most vulnerable. Kids without the stability of two parents are more likely to face poverty, crime, and mental health problems.
And he's careful to say this isn't a moral judgment on single parents. It's just a social fact. A society that doesn't prioritize family stability is failing its children.
Now, he also talks about religion, and I know that can be a tricky subject, but his argument isn't sectarian.
No, it's not. He sees religion as a unique source of moral energy. It provides a transcendent foundation for morality. It tells us our actions have cosmic significance, and it creates communities of memory and hope.
He's critical of the new atheist who thinks science can replace religion.
Right.
Science can tell us what is, but not what ought to be. We need a moral language that speaks of love, justice, compassion, and forgiveness. And for most of history, faith has provided that language.
But he also takes on a new secularism that wants to banish religion from the public square. He says that's not neutral. It's just another form of dogmatism.
Exactly. And he reminds us that the great moral achievements of the West, like abolishing slavery and the civil rights movement, were rooted in religious faith. To exclude that faith from public life is to cut ourselves off from a powerful source of moral inspiration.
I was worried he might be calling for a return to some mythical golden age, but he's not. He acknowledges the gains of modernity, like freedom and equality.
No, he's not a reactionary. He's saying we threw the baby out with the bathwater. We rightly rejected the oppressive parts of tradition, but we wrongly discarded the moral framework that gave it strength. We need to combine the freedom of modernity with the moral depth of tradition.
The final part of the book tackles extremism and the breakdown of civil discourse. He says when we lose a shared moral vocabulary, we stop arguing about right and wrong and start fighting about who's in and who's out.
Politics becomes a zero-sum game between warring tribes. We see it in populism and identity politics, and we see it online with all the anger and contempt.
He calls for a renewal of the dignity of difference. We have to learn to live with people who aren't like us, to disagree without being disagreeable. That takes moral imagination, the ability to see the image of God in the face of the stranger.
It's a hopeful book, though. He believes we can rebuild a moral society if we make a conscious effort. We have to move from a culture of I to a culture of we and teach our children not just how to be successful, but how to be good.
The challenge of our time isn't economic or technological. It's moral. How do we live together in peace and with purpose? And the answer has been known for millennia.
It's the golden rule. Do not do to others what you would not have them do to you. Love your neighbor as yourself. These aren't just religious platitudes. They're practical wisdom that makes civilization possible.
You know, the part that got me was when he talks about how we've replaced duty with rights. And I think, yeah, I see that in myself sometimes. I'm quick to demand what I'm owed, but slower to ask what I owe.
That's a humbling realization. But the book isn't about guilt. It's about finding meaning again. And that comes from being part of something bigger than ourselves.
For me, the takeaway is that we can't just rely on markets or the state to fix things. We have to rebuild the moral fabric ourselves in our families and communities. It starts with how we treat the person next to us.
And if you want to explore more big ideas like this, the whole library is over at 7minutebooks.com/app. There are over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language, and it starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access. Just a little something for the curious mind. Morality reminds us that the good life isn't about having more, it's about being more together. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.